Welcome to the Lessons from Your Hairstylist podcast, where we uncover and leverage your unique beauty and personal style. I'm your host, Sarah Cruz, a beauty industry educator and hairstylist with 30 years experience. This show is dedicated to providing you with insights and practical advice for living a happier, healthier, and more fulfilled life. Experience that special stylist-client bond right here as we dive into conversations with experts in beauty and wellness. Here, you'll gain valuable tips on personal style and self-care to empower your journey. Join me to unlock the secrets to living beautifully well while elevating your lifestyle, mind, body, and spirit. Your appointment is now, so have a seat and get ready for transformation. Well, hello and welcome to the Lessons from Your Hairstylist podcast. I'm your host and hairstylist friend, Sarah Cruz. I am so excited today. This is an episode that I've wanted to do for quite some time. We are talking all about cosmetic procedures and how they really are medical procedures. And if you're someone who's thinking about diving into this a little bit, whether you've ever had any sort of a cosmetic or aesthetic procedure done before, or if you're kind of dipping your toe in the water, I have my favorite nurse injector here, Megan Donovan Spivey, and she is the only person I would ever go to for anything that I would want done with my aesthetics, my face, my cosmetic procedures, anything like that. So I am so excited to have Megan on today because she is someone who really has a lot of experience in this field. She has been in the world of aesthetics medicine for 14 years now, and she is actually somebody who trains other nurse injectors. So it's really amazing because she is someone who is really on the forefront of what's going on in the world of aesthetics and aesthetic medicine. And I trust her with my face implicitly. She's the only person. And so I'm so excited again to introduce you to her because, like I say, if this is something that you're thinking about doing, she is the person who can really give you the trusted information. She's got all of the experience, a world of experience. So let's dive into talking to Megan today. Megan Donovan Spivey, she is an aesthetic nurse injector. She has a Bachelor of Nursing, and she has 14 years in aesthetic medicine. She is a trainer for other nurse injectors, and she has 6 years where she has gone out and she has trained and she has helped other injectors learn their trade and learn their craft. She is highly educated, lots of experience. And so let's get into talking to Megan. Megan, thank you so much for coming on today. I am so excited to see you. Way overdue for having my own face touched up. But like I said, you're the only person I trust, and I'm so excited to see you.
Well, I'm honored that I'm the only person that you trust, and I'm honored to be on this podcast with you. Just thank you so much for having me.
Well, you're welcome. And I tell you, this is so funny because I'm literally just starting out in this whole podcasting thing. And so it's fun to see a familiar face as I get started. I'm getting a little bit more comfortable with this, but I like being able to see someone that, you know, I trust. And when I'm talking about beauty and bringing the information to people out there, having someone that I know is going to be bringing the truth and quality information to people out there who may be looking to dive into a little bit of having a cosmetic procedure. I want to really like take this time to educate people. That's what the whole purpose of this podcast is about, is to give the true and right information. And I know you're the person to do that. So I would love if you could share a little bit just about your background and sort of your journey into getting into aesthetics medicine.
Yes, I can. So when I started nursing school, well, first when I started college, I was pre-med. And then I decided that work-life balance, nursing was going to be a better fit for me. So I chose nursing. But when I was pre-med, I wanted to be a dermatologist. I had really bad skin as a child. At 12, I was on Accutane. And a lot of people had play a role in my care as far as estheticians and nurses and doctors. And I just really loved skin from an early age. And so when I decided I was going to do nursing, I just knew I was going to be in a dermatology office. That's what I wanted to do. But when you get out of school, everybody wants you, you should go to the hospital first. That's where you get your best experience. And so, and 9 times out of 10, they really love a new grad to get on a med-surg floor. And that's what I did. I went to med-surg right out of college. And I was there for about 8 months. And sometimes I tell people a year because it sounds better. And found, well, I went to my dermatology office for an appointment. And I asked them while I was there, I said, do you guys have any positions available? And they said, we're going to get another doctor, maybe in like 9 months, we might have a position then, but not anything right now. And I was devastated, of course, because I had tried. I mean, like every night I would come home from my job at the hospital and I would put applications out for just, I mean, anything else, not even just derm. I just wanted to be out of the hospital. It just, it was awful. And I was night shift and I hated that. And so I knew I really didn't want to be in the hospital, but I also wanted to pay my dues. I did not want to be somebody that people didn't respect because I didn't go through the proper channels to do things the right way. I'm a brand new nurse. I want to do things the right way. I'm a big fan of paying your dues. And you know, there's a lot that I learned in the hospital that I still use today. And that does sound bizarre because it's so far away from aesthetic medicine, but there are just things that I wouldn't have the knowledge about had I not done my time there. So I'm glad that I did it. I made wonderful friends that I still keep in touch with. And so I go to this dermatology appointment. They don't have a spot for me at that office. And it was my office. I wanted to be there, but I put feelers out everywhere. And then that day when I left that dermatology appointment, I was just so downtrodden. And I went to a makeup counter at Dillard's in the Cool Springs Galleria. And I went to a counter I'd never been to before. And I met a woman I didn't know from Adam. And she was just trying to help me find some foundation. And I was complaining about my woes. So I was just telling her about how I really didn't like my job and I really wanted to be at this dermatology office, but they didn't have anything. And she goes, can you inject? And I didn't know what she was talking about. And I just said, well, there's nothing I can't learn. And so she actually got in touch with her friend who is the esthetician for Dr. Clymer in Franklin. And he's a facial plastic surgeon and very well respected. And this esthetician had been with him for a while and she had some pull and she talked to me on the phone for about 30 minutes and she said to put a good word in for me. And so I got a couple of interviews and I got the job. And what's amazing, because people ask me this all the time, and I feel like my story is not the best one for inspiration for others to get into this field. So I'm going to give some inspirational stuff. But my story is that there was a facial plastic surgeon who wanted a nurse injector who didn't have prior experience because he didn't want to break any bad habits. He wanted me to be a carbon copy of him. And so it was the most wonderful way to get into this field because he trained me on for months before I ever touched products. I watched him. So I shadowed him for months. I went in and saw surgery so I could see anatomy like firsthand when he was doing facial plastic surgeries, facelifts, brow lifts, blepharoplasties, and rhinoplasties. And it was just what a fantastic entry into this field to have that kind of education before I ever laid hands on patients. And also he was so patient, so kind. I mean, he worked with me diligently to make me feel comfortable and to make sure that I knew the anatomy and I knew what to do to be a safe injector, which was paramount to everything that has been built on top of that as I've gone through my career. And I'm so grateful for how I got started. For somebody who's trying to get started now, it's difficult to find a place that wants to train you from the ground up, like especially med spas. They typically want you to come in and have so many years of experience because they're not going to have the time or the manpower to train you. And in this field, it's very much the type that if you want to do this, you're going to have to spend a significant amount of money, of your own money, to train yourself. Like you'll have to go to... There are courses that are offered. There are injectors that do shadow days and private hands-on training days, but they're not cheap, not the good ones. And there are conferences that you can go to, but oftentimes if you're going to actually train hands-on, you're going to have somebody who's willing to also, if you're a nurse, get a doctor that can get you product because you can't write for your own product. or sign for your own product. But basically, if you are getting into this brand new with no experience in the aesthetic field, you have to take your education into your own hands. Doctors, nurses, nurse practitioners, PAs, none of them learn how to do this in school. This is not part of the curriculum for birth to death. So aesthetic medicine is very much a experience-based profession. And it doesn't mean that you can't, you have obviously have to have a certain level of education, and that's different from state to state. In the state of Tennessee, you have to be a nurse, nurse practitioner, PA, or a doctor to be able to inject faces.
Well, when we were talking about in the beginning of this, when I was introducing you and I was letting everybody know that you are the only person that I trust, it's because of that background that you started with that so many people don't get to start with. You had that experience in the hospital. You truly understood the anatomy. You had someone who was a surgeon who was teaching you, who was taking you under their wing. And I think, just like we talked about at the beginning, that experience can be so much more important than just the years of schooling. Because unfortunately, for those coming into the field now, and for patients out there who are looking to make a choice as to who's going to take care of me for these medical procedures, there is not the same level now in some aspects where people who are coming into the field now, if I'm understanding you correctly, they may not have access to the same types of foundational principles that you would have had. And I would think that having those foundational principles that you've had would set you up to have an even deeper understanding of what it is that you're doing. And what I love about you when I come in to get, you know, my procedures done is that you explain everything to me like so thoroughly. Now, is it Greek to me? Yes. But the fact that you know and that you're taking the time to explain to me, like, I'm going to do this and here's why I'm going to do this. And it's because this, this, and this, this is going to be the result. Here's what could be the risk if we don't do it this way. And here's why I choose this. Here's why I choose this product. This is new. I like this. Here's why. And I think that, just like, again, we talked about at the beginning, it is that connection and that trust that you build with a medical professional that sets the tone for someone like me to say, there's just nobody else that I would see, because you've set yourself apart to that degree that it's obvious that your experience and your training that was outside of your degree has been so valuable as to what you do. And I love that we're talking about that on this episode, because yes, we're going to get into the cosmetic part of it and all of the questions that people have, but I do think it's really important, like you were explaining earlier, that we have to really draw that line between sort of the Instagrammable, like, faces before and afters, and having it be like a purely aesthetic thing, to understand that these are true medical procedures and it takes a very skilled practitioner to do them correctly.
Right. It's one of those things where sometimes I can look at a patient when I'm educating them on what I want to do and why I want to do it, and I can see that I maybe have told them too much and I've spooked them. So there's another side of that where I'm like, maybe they didn't want to hear everything I had to say. But I do feel, as the patient, you need to have the power to, these choices have to be your own, right? Like, I can see your face and I can see what I want to do, but also, is that okay with you? Here are the risks. This is how I want to do it. This is your face in the end. Like, I want to make sure that what I'm seeing with my mind's eye is still going to fit aesthetically what you want to see. Like, we have to agree, because at the end of the day, if I do it the way I want to do it, but that's not really what you saw or what you wanted for yourself, then I might feel like I slam dunked it, but you may not be pleased when you leave. And so that's one thing. Like, the outcome is important for both the patient and myself. But then you do need to know that there are risks with it. I think a lot of times those are downplayed. And there's nothing wrong with social media. I think in so many ways, it's great that we can educate on that platform. But it's also sometimes maybe minimized what the actual risks are to this, because it is medicine and it is a clinical thing. And there are certain restrictions that we have. There are certain things that are that come with added risks higher than others. And I just think that, you know, it would take entirely too much time when a patient comes in to go through every, like there's a consent that people have to sign and it has all the risks on it. I'm sure 2 out of 10 actually read it, probably less than that. And so I try to make, to touch on the most important things that people need to know so they can make an informed, they've actually informed when they sign their consent, they know what they're getting themselves into. And obviously I'm going to take every caution that I can to do things safely, to do it appropriately, to make sure that the outcome is both aesthetically pleasing and that there won't be any complications post-treatment. But I just think that that's the not so sparkly side. Yeah, the sexy side of this sort of sexy career, you know?
Right.
I mean, it's,
I know, because you've got your paper that you give to the patient. And of course, it has reads all the risks. Well, I've signed it, too. But do you think I read it? No. I mean,
right.
It's like,
I want to look right. Signed.
Okay, that's great. I trust you. Now, what are we doing? Because it's like,
right?
You are.
I'm like, you could go blind.
I'm like, okay, I trust you. It's good.
You know what? I mean, if somebody's going to do something to my face, I want to know, have you had complications? I hope they have. And I want to know that they've been successful treating those complications. Right. I want to, because if you're doing this long enough, if you've done enough patients, you should have had something that you've had to take care of. Like, it's just inevitable. But
you told me once, you said, hey, I don't have the correct terminology. I am not the professional, but we were in the under eye area and you were like, okay, here is what could possibly happen. I'm very careful. I do, you know, all of these things. And you were telling me and you were explaining it to me in great detail. You said, now, if this or that, you make sure you call me. I don't care. Like,
yeah,
you know, this happens night or day. You text me, you call me, let me know. And
yes.
So you let it be known that, yeah. And hey, this has happened maybe one time. It is something that can happen. And here's how we would correct it. So then I just have like total faith of knowing that, like, okay, if there's a risk in anything, but if anybody is going to do this, it's going to be Megan. And I also know that she's going to have my back should anything take place that needs to be corrected. She also knows how to take care of that as well.
It's just important to, like, if you're a nurse, nurse practitioner, PA, obviously doctor, you're a provider, you're treating these patients and you're the first line person that they're, like, you're the one that's done the treatment. You're obviously the one that needs to take care of the complications should it arise, and the one that can do it the best because you know where you placed your product. And honestly, if anybody ever calls or texts me, I'm almost always going to go in the office and look and put hands on them and put eyes on them, because I've got to just see it to make so I can sleep good at night. We've got to make sure, is it a bruise or is it more than a bruise? I've driven to Nashville from my home in Pulaski, which is like an hour and a half, at 10 o'clock at night, and it was a bruise, but I slept so much better knowing it was a bruise and it wasn't something scarier. It was a patient who'd never had this particular area injected before. And I had a feeling I was walking into a bruise, but I'm not going to risk it. If it was my face, somebody better not risk it with mine.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
So
that's what I love about
you. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Like, take it seriously. This is somebody's face. It's serious to them. It's serious to me. And that's how serious people should take this career. You are asking me, when people get into it, I think that I spend thousands of dollars a year to be educated myself. I'm 14 years in it. I'm learning new things every year, and I go do shadow days still because there are things that I can do better. There are techniques I want to learn. There are terminology and verbiage that people use to educate their patients that maybe I'm not using and I should. So, you know, if you get complacent in this career, you're not going to be successful. If you decide that spending thousands of dollars a year doesn't work for you to educate yourself, it's probably not the career for you, because it is what it is. It's expensive to get educated in this field. You do have to take it upon yourself. You're going to have to do it in the beginning, and you're going to have to keep doing it to stay with it, to be up on the latest and the greatest, and to know the things that set you apart and make you a better injector.
Well, and it says a lot about you and the fact that you are out there actually educating other providers. To me, that just says so much about what you're doing in your own education and your own professional development as well. With that, I want to get into what some people may be wondering about if they're thinking about having some of these procedures done, and maybe they haven't had anything done before, and they're looking to maybe dip their toe into something. We want to start to understand what a lot of these treatments are so that people can start to understand what's out there and how to make a good decision. So can you just explain? So first of all, you're doing injections for the most part. Is that correct? On people's
right.
faces. And so with that, can you talk about what the different types of injections are and what they do and what the options are for people as far as getting aesthetic and cosmetic services for their face?
So I specifically do facial balancing using fillers, neuromodulators, so Botox, Dysport, and there are three others that are on the market too that do the same thing. And then you've got your biostimulators now, and then we're starting to see more and more regenerative medicine like the biostimulators. So I do neuromodulators in muscles that create lines on the face because of dynamic strain. So when you furrow your brow, when you raise your eyebrows, when you squint your eyes, the corners of the mouth being pulled down by these muscles, the DAOs, the chins that dimple, if you see an elderly person who has a lot of peddling, sort of orange peely skin, then all those things, and even the neck bands can be injected with a neuromodulator to just relax those muscles so that when those muscles are relaxed, that skin looks softer. And then fillers are going to be injectable gels, essentially, and they can be hyaluronic acid, which is probably the most popular. There are some that are calcium-based. There are even like the PRP and the PRF that they use your own blood for to use to do volume enhancement. But basically, fillers are going in and filling areas of volume loss. As we age, the fat pads in our face are like jigsaw puzzle pieces all fit together. They're not all one blanket of fat. They're little puzzle pieces that fit together. And as we age, they atrophy and sort of separate from one another. And so that space in between starts to be these grooves and shadows that we start to see on our face. So filler sort of acts like a thing that can connect the dots and refill those spaces in so that the fat pads look like they're congruent, like they're just one cohesive, smooth thing instead of having undulations and shadows.
It's such a great visual to really help us understand about what's going on in our face, why you might use a filler, why you might use a biostimulator.
And why you can't use like a biostimulator, like a Sculptra specifically, is going to be something injected into this tissue that will give you volume, but also help with collagen production. So like fillers are going to fill. Neuromodulators like Botox, Dysport, Xeomin, Jeuveau, and Daxify or Daxi, those are all going to relax muscles. And you can only relax muscles in certain parts of the face because some of these muscles have to actually work for you to look normal. And then the fillers, well, you can fill areas in that volume loss is if you have asymmetries, if you have volume loss, if you want to enhance something, like lips, they're small and you want to make them a little bigger. But fillers fill. They don't really lift. They might have an optical illusion that they lift, but and when you sort of change the proportions of the face with revolumization, then you can have the appearance of lift, but it's sort of an optical illusion, one that we appreciate and we like, but that's what fillers really do. And then, you know, when you go further, the biostimulators, they are volume enhancing. They also make the tissue more dense with increasing the collagen and elastin in the tissue. And so you get kind of a twofer. You get better skin integrity and you get volume enhancement. And the regenerative medicine, which this is kind of, I'm not going to be the best educator on this because this is newer. And biostimulants are like regenerative medicine, but there are some other things out there right now, like platelet-derived growth factor is one of the newer things that people are talking about. And then PRP and PRF people were already doing.
So Megan, what are the most common types of injectable treatments that you see people getting in the office?
Most commonly, Botox and Dysport, which are neuromodulators, and then fillers. That's what I probably do the most of, because you're doing those in conjunction to create like a facial balance and facial harmony. You're looking at what muscles of the face need to be relaxed so that the skin can be smooth, and then what areas of volume deficit need to be enhanced or replaced or revolumized so that things can have no undulations, no shadows. And obviously, within reason to someone's age and anatomy, but you really are trying to, more often than not, we're doing those together so that we can create balance in a face and keep everything all in the same decade. It doesn't make a lot of sense if everything up here is tight and then everything down here has lots of lines and lots of volume loss.
So what is the difference between, say, a neuromodulator, I think I heard you say, and then a filler? Can you talk about what the differences are there?
So neuromodulators are going to be the Botox, Dysport, and all the others that I mentioned that are basically injected into the muscles where there is movement that makes lines in the skin. And you can do that if it doesn't affect the normal movement of the face. So the glabella or the brow, the frontalis of the forehead, the crow's feet, even when chins are dimpling or the corners of the mouth are pulling down, the neck bands are showing, you can do a neuromodulator. And there are other ways that you can dilute it down and do it for oil production, and you can do it in sort of like a microneedling, or there used to be some, but there still is Aquagold that people would sort of do a little microneedling thing with a little bit of hyaluronic acid and a little bit of neuromodulator to kind of help with oil production in the skin. So there's lots of that. You can even do Botox or Dysport and underarms for sweating, so hyperhidrosis. And there's a whole host of other things, the hands, the feet for sweating. Fillers, though, they're going to fill areas of volume deficit. So they're going to go in and replace volume where there are shadows. Neuromodulators relax muscles. Fillers fill in volume deficit areas, thin cheeks, asymmetrical cheeks. I mean, sometimes we're just going in and cleaning up asymmetries, because even that is an enhancement in itself. But there also are going to be opportunities for, like, as we age, our temples get hollow, our cheeks get hollow, our under eyes can get hollower. Sometimes we get bags. The fat pads are separating from themselves and they're all sort of falling down and in, and we get more nasolabial folds and marionettes, and the lines around the mouth start to show up. And all that's going to be things that we want to use fillers for, to revolumize those areas so that we can get them back to a more youthful appearance.
How do you choose which brand products that you are using? So why would you maybe choose Botox as opposed to Dysport? And those, just to recap, those are neuromodulators, correct?
Right. So if I am doing, I mean, really they're interchangeable, Botox, Dysport, and the others. The last one's a little bit different because it touts a longer duration. Daxxify talks about 6 to 9 month duration. That's not for everybody, but they have patients in their studies who got longer duration. The typical duration for a neuromodulator is 3 to 4 months. And the best it looks is at 2 weeks to 8 weeks. And then you start to see the movement come back at that 8 week mark. And it's usually pretty slow. And by 12 weeks, 16 weeks, it's time to do it again, if you're going to keep it consistent. And then you have to also remember, like, even if you, like, if you break your leg and it's in a cast, what happens to the muscle on the casted leg? It shrinks because it's not being used. Muscles of the face also atrophy when they're not being used. You see these patients who've been on neuromodulators for a long time and their muscles are not going to be as robust as muscles that have never been injected with something to keep them quiet. So there's a benefit to that.
So what would you say the long-term consequences are for any of these injectables? If somebody, I mean, is there any sort of a benefit or a hindrance if to someone being on certain types of injectables for a long period of time?
So neuromodulators, if you're on those for a long period of time, you've got the atrophy of the muscles, which is really not a bad thing in the grand scheme of things. That's kind of a nice benefit, a bonus to maybe not having to do it as often down the road. Honestly, it's probably years and years down the road from when you get started that you might do it less and less, but that's one thing. If you're doing it when you're younger, and you keep those muscles quiet when you're younger, you're not making those wear creases on the skin that are going to be more indelible over time. So if you are younger, starting out with a neuromodulator, you probably won't have the lines at 50 and 60 that you would have had you not been keeping those muscles quiet. Filler is not really going to have that same benefit. Like if you start doing Botox or Dysport early on in life, you won't have as many lines when you hit 50s and 60s, right? Because you kept the muscles quiet. Well, filler is just filling in areas of volume loss. And then the body breaks that filler down and you have to keep that up. It's not really going to like give you more volume over time. Now, Sculptra biostimulant would give you volume over time, help keep that collagen elastin layer a little bit more robust and dense in the tissues. Whereas, you know, like when you, this is kind of a long spiel, but when you turn 18, every year after that, you start losing 1% of your collagen. So by the time you're 40, I think it's 40 or 45, you've lost 25%. Don't judge me. I can't do math. But, you know, in your 40s, somewhere around there, you've lost 25% of your collagen stores. That's noticeable, right? People start to notice it maybe in their 30s. You do something like a biostimulant like Sculptra, and you are going to continue to keep that collagen and elastin network more dense, more robust. So the skin's going to look better. But fillers don't do that. So they're going to fill in areas of volume loss. The body is going to eat it up, and then you're going to have to keep it up.
Is there a consequence to being like, say, like I am right now, way overdue for things that I've had done? So I've had, I think, quite a bit of filler with you, and it's looked incredible, I feel like, but I'm overdue for that. It's probably been a year since I've seen you. Now, I know you said that the fillers can last maybe up to like 18 months or whatever, but I mean, I definitely have to come back, and I've got nothing going on up here as far as the neuromodulators. Nothing's happening up here. So is there a benefit to keeping it done regularly, or is it okay to let it go and then come back again and rejuvenate? Or I don't want to say refluff, but I do feel it does give me.
No,
I know what you mean. Is there any sort of downside to letting it go and then coming back and getting it all done again, or should you keep that going consistently all the time?
I mean, consistent Botox Dysport treatment, neuromodulator treatment, you're going to see that the lines stay soft. They never get to a point, like you're not going to allow that skin to crease and crease over time to where you have these wear creases. If you leave that out of the equation, you will eventually, like, remember that your collagen elastin stores are breaking down, your muscles keep moving, skin that is thinning, and you're going to see those lines become more indelible. Fillers, say you do filler and then it's a year or two, three, four before you do it again, your body is going to break that filler down. Now, do I think that, you know, say you do your filler and it's 10 years later and somebody's doing a facelift and you haven't had filler in 10 years and they get in there and they might find some remnant of filler. I wouldn't be shocked by that. We know now that that stuff hangs on even longer than we used to think it did. The benefit, the actual revolumization benefit to the filler might not really be there anymore a decade later, but you may still have some remnants in your face. But it's not like if you stop doing your filler and then it's years before you come back and do it again, there's no harm, no foul on that. Like you can just add it back. It's an older face that you're putting it into. Your result might not be the same as it was 3 or 4 years prior. And I'm just using that number because I started with it. But you know, at the end of the day, it's still going to give you volume. It's still going to improve things. It's a matter, and you had asked me this before, but talking about expectations, like that's another thing to have a conversation with somebody. The expectation that they had 3 or 4 years prior at the appointment, you know, 3 or 4 years later is going to be different. This face has aged some. So we might have to remember and realize that the result we got back then might not be the same.
Yeah, exactly. For myself, and I know everybody's different. For myself, I have felt like things still look pretty good. I felt like it was able to last a while. You know what I mean?
Honestly, I mean, I've done temples, under eyes, medial cheek, lateral cheek, piriform, nasolabial fold, oral commissures, lips, chin, chin hollows, marionettes. That's pretty much everything. And I probably at least every 2 years, go back in and sort of refluff things. And I may not do it all at the same time. Like I try to just watch it. And as I see it dissipate in certain areas, then I go back and clean it up as I go along. I might not do it all at one time. But They do last longer than we used to think that they did. And I'm very much the type that when somebody comes in, we are not going to base your treatment on what the timeline is in the chart. I'm going to look at your face. What I see that day is what I'm treating. If we go by timeline, we're going to have all these overfilled people who've done too much. They've gone filler blind. The injector's not really being honest about what they see, and they're just treating them to treat them. And it has to be based on what you see in your chair. What does that person present with that day? Do they actually have a deficit?
So, Megan, how do you approach your patient consultations? And with that, can you also talk a little bit about how you would manage someone's expectations, especially if they've never had anything like this done before?
I will always take photos. I like to look at those photos with patients so that I can point out different things that I see that are genetic, age-related. And this is going to be talking about volume. It's going to be talking about the muscles that are moving that are causing lines. We're going to talk about skincare too, because if I'm working on the structure of the face, I also need to be considering the fabric of the face. Those two go hand in hand. And then every canvas is different. So this is not point and click or paint by number. I want everybody to realize that how their friend was treated is not necessarily going to be the template we use for them. So we have to go through, I go top to bottom when I assess somebody's face. We're going through the muscle groups. We're going through temple and cheeks, under eyes. I want them to understand why I suggest multiple things, because typically I do. And I know that not everybody's budget is going to be able to do everything all at one time, but we can also manage that in a series of treatments too. And I want them to ultimately get the result that blends together and makes them look like everything is in the same decade. So I need them to understand why when I'm doing their lips, they might need some chin. If their chin does not balance a bigger lip, like sometimes people will just come in and they'll say, well, I've got small lips and I want some lip filler. But if the chin doesn't support that lip filler, it's not the right thing for me to do. I would do them a bigger disservice by giving them the bigger lips. I should just say no, not unless we can do lips and chin together, because I'm going to have you imbalanced and that's not going to enhance your face. So there's going to be some.
This thing about life was when you put a little chin thing in. Just
I
a
love
little
my chin.
You said you were going to do a little chin, and I was like, chin? You said, oh, yeah.
It's good stuff. And I really do. I mean, like, it's not like it has to be a ton of stuff, but it has to be appropriately placed throughout the face so that it's an enhancement and doesn't, you know, I want it to all flow together nicely. I want that there shouldn't be one thing that people get stuck on your face when they're looking at you. It should just all mesh well together. But that is using different modalities. It's skincare. It's doing neuromodulators to make sure the skin looks smooth. It's doing the filler to make sure that the face has the volume in the appropriate places and that things are balanced when you look at people from facial thirds and then when you section their face into fifths to make sure that you are doing appropriate width and length. And there's just a lot that goes into a consultation. And I want to have those photos to make sure that I can show them what they had previously. I can have something to base my afters off so they can see what result they've received so that when they come back and maybe we've gone filler blind and we think we need more when maybe we don't, that we can look at these photos and say, oh, wait, I do still see that I have a result. You're right. I don't need to do anything today. I say no a lot. A lot, a lot. And I cheat myself out of money when I say no. I don't make anything when I say no to somebody, but I will have loyal patients when I say no to somebody than when I'm sitting here just trying to make a dollar on somebody and just telling them yes, because maybe that's what they want to hear and they're willing to pay for the syringe.
And I love that. That's one of the things that makes me trust you so much as well, because that's what I don't want. I know myself, and I know I could real quick just be blind and just want to like go all in, you know, and I think that's also one of the things that people might have a fear about when they're thinking about embarking on this journey of getting a cosmetic procedure done, because we've all looked at someone else and thought, I don't want to look like that. Now,
right.
I all different. We all like a different result. Some people like a more dramatic result than others. But for those of us who are looking to have a result that looks like it's natural, it's really important because a lot of times just more seems better after a while. You know, if one thing is good, more is better. And I love that, you know, I could come in and be like, I don't know, what do you think about this? Like, let's pick it up more. And you're like, oh no, let's slow your roll. Like, we don't need to do that. And
right. It makes more sense to do right by somebody and keep their loyalty than to make a buck off of them and then them never come back. Because somebody's going to tell them it doesn't look right. Somebody's going to be honest with them. God willing, somebody's going to be a friend to them and tell them the truth. But that's my job. I'm supposed to tell them the truth. I'm supposed to make sure that I'm doing things to enhance people's faces, not to detract from their look. The managing of expectations does have a lot to do with those photos, because a lot of times we sort of forget. I mean, I myself am guilty of forgetting what I looked like before, forgetting what the result looks like, and then thinking I need more before I do. And I don't ever want somebody to walk in and see me and me be the reason why they don't let me touch them.
I've done that. Not with you, but I did. And I did not get anything done. And that was before I had ever had even one procedure of any kind done. I walked in and I saw someone in the office that I thought to myself, that's just exactly what I don't want. Right. And I walked into I had my consultation with the medical professional, and, you know, she was talking to me about all of these different areas in my face that seem to need correction. And she said to me, you know, the key is, like, you don't want to look overdone. And she said, look at me. She said, this, you can't tell I've had anything done. And I thought to myself, I'm shocked, because she must have gone blind herself, because her cheeks were so puffy. And, like, to me, I thought, you look so much like what I would not want to happen. And right. So I didn't, you know, obviously get anything done, but I do think it's easy to get that blindness. That was one of the questions I wanted to ask you about, was it's just so easy, I think, to get desensitized when we look at ourselves in the mirror every single day.
Oh, yeah.
You could really go overboard.
Well, you get really nitpicky too. Like, once you've made a decision to electively change something about your face, then you're going to go home and maybe you correct that thing. But if there's something else that you can nitpick, then that's another thing that you're going to gravitate towards. And you're going to think that you need to fix that too. Or is that something that just now came up because I did the other thing? Like, did I cause this? It's a good thing to have photos, because that really does help us to recognize what's already previously been there and what has happened since filler has come on board, or neurotoxins have come on board, or any other treatment modality. Really, like, the before photos are important for everybody, and they're not just to sit here and be like, no, this didn't happen because of what I did, this was already you, even though that is helpful. But it is good for us to see, like, where we started, where we got to, the fact that we still have results, and that we don't need to just pull the trigger on every whim just because we woke up that day and we felt ugly.
Exactly.
It has nothing to do with how we look, just how we feel that day.
Right. Yes. 100%. 100%. Have you ever had to turn a client away who just got so desensitized?
Oh, yeah.
They just were like,
yeah. I mean, I think probably any good injector has eventually had to turn somebody away, because there's just, when you see that their aesthetic and yours don't align, like, you know that you won't make them happy, because you're not willing to do the thing that they're asking for because it really would not enhance their face, then I'm not even going to take their money to do anything. Just, it would be better for them to find somebody who was more aligned with their goals, or, like, honest to God, it'd be better if everybody told them no and they understood that they were asking for the wrong thing. But sometimes that doesn't happen. And I think, unfortunately, they will find a place that will take their money. Someone will do it. But yeah. I don't want to be that person. And I definitely don't want to do something that just makes somebody look weird.
And that's one of the things that I love about you, is because I trust you and I know that you're going to keep me safe. What are some of the safety measures that you put in place in your practice?
One of the biggest things is I try to choose fillers that I would use in my own face, neuromodulators I would use in my own face that I feel like are safer, that have a higher safety profile. I know that if I were to give a sheet to the patient that had every single choice, every skew on there, And it said every risk that came along with it and what the percentage of chance of an adverse event would be, then I know that they would choose the safest thing. So I'm going to do that for them. I'm going to choose the product that has the highest safety profile for the area that I'm treating. I'm going to choose the product that has the chemical makeup that's going to be the right thing for, like, there are certain fillers that are more elastic. There are certain ones that aren't. There are certain fillers that draw more fluid to them than others. And there's a reason why we grab different fillers for different parts of the face. I'm not using one blanket thing for the entire face. It doesn't work that way. This area has a lot more movement in it and needs more elastic fillers here for the stretch and mobility of the lower face. The things that I use in the upper face don't have as much stretch to them. They don't need to. All the fillers that I choose are always going to be the ones that are low incidence on late onset nodules or the body having an issue with it later down the road, because there are fillers that you can inject and then months and months down the road, people can have issues. That can happen with any filler. So I don't want to sit here and say that it's just this one or two things that are out there on the market that do that. There are plenty of things that you could respond to that your body could have a reaction to. But I am going to do my best to make sure that I choose the thing that I believe in my heart will be the safest thing for a patient. I myself have autoimmune issues. I choose the things that I know. And I wasn't born that way. Those things happened to me like in 2014. And so I know that I might be a person who responds funky to things sometimes. And so I know that that can be the case with my patients. I'm going to choose the best product that I know will give them a predictable outcome, good duration, and be the safest thing that I can put in their body that their body should not have a negative response to.
So we've talked about safety. And then also there is the concern of pain. So let's talk a little bit about the pain management aspect. I know from my own experience, certain parts of the face are a little bit more uncomfortable than others. You have to remind me to breathe a lot when I
do that often.
Because I tend to flinch, my shoulders go up, things like that. So yeah. How do you manage pain from the various procedures that you do?
So I try to go ahead and let people know like what areas I know are going to be more spicy than others, because there are some with just more nerve endings that are going to be more uncomfortable. Then I also do numbing cream where I can. I'm also going to keep a sharp needle. I'm not going to stick somebody over and over with a dull needle. I'm going to change my needles often. I'm going to make sure that I am intentional with my sticks. I'm not a fast injector by any stretch of the imagination, because I'm a safe injector. And I'm going to also employ every safe technique that I know to make sure that I'm not in a blood vessel, that I'm not going to do anything to compress a blood vessel. I know the anatomy well, and I respect it. But I also, there are some areas that are just uncomfortable, you know, and there's only so much we can do. So numbing cream helps kind of blunt the sting of the stick. If I give patients the expectation, like, this is going to be uncomfortable, breathe with me through this, drop your shoulders, relax your body, and just kind of talk them through. 9 times out of 10, if I can tell you what to expect in that area and you kind of get your mind around it, then we can do anything and people can manage their own pain. But it's not, I mean, there are people who do Pronox. I think when you're doing lasers and procedures where patients don't have to be as, when they don't have to participate as much, when you can just lay there, then it's, Pronox is great because you can give somebody Pronox and they can just relax and kind of go to another place and they could get a treatment done. But like when I'm doing somebody's lips, I've had people ask me like, why don't you do Pronox or why don't you do a dental block? There are plenty of people that do. I just feel like when your lips are like this, it's not as easy for me to be able to give you the outcome that I know I'm capable of. I sometimes need their participation. So that's me as an injector. There will be other people who'd be like, that's so cruel. Why would you not just dental block them? And to each his own, but I very rarely have somebody who doesn't come back for more because of the pain.
Right. I mean, it's not fun, but it's also not, it's not unmanageable. And you do a numbing cream beforehand. And
it definitely blunts the sting of the stick.
Early and get it to sit on there for a long period of time.
I try to leave it on there for like at least 20.
Oh, 30 minutes early. Can we?
Yeah. I try to leave it on for at least 20 minutes. And then keeping a sharp needle. Sharp needles feel better than dull needles. They also bruise you less than dull needles do. I'm always going to make sure that I'm very intentional about my sticks. I'm not like just easing it in there and making it more uncomfortable than it has to be. And then I let you know what to expect. And if you know what to expect, and sometimes I try to embellish. So maybe you think it's going to be worse than what it is. And surprise, it's not as bad.
Right.
But overall, I think the expectations of how the discomfort, the products are almost all mixed with lidocaine too. So they numb as you go. So it's not like it's going to continue to be as painful as the first few sticks are. But the lidocaine has to get into the tissue. So the first few sticks are usually the most, Sheryl Crow, the first cut is the deepest. It's going to be the most comfortable discomfort that you have is going to be those first few sticks. And then after that, you can usually deal with it.
That's the sound bite. First cut is the deepest. Oh my gosh. Is there ever a time you would need to undo a result for a patient?
So back in the day, we were doing lip filler entirely too often. So I will say that if you've been an injector for the last, in the last 10 years, if you've got 10 years or maybe even just a little less than that under your belt, you've probably done filler for somebody, especially in the lip, more often than you should have. And also, I think some of that comes with like the experience I have now. I say no so much easier now than I did when I was a younger injector. And that's just experience, right? So lips are an area that we can see migration. And more often than not, it's because we've done too much at one time or we've done too much too often. So we dissolve that specifically if it's up here in this area of the lip and not actually in that vermilion tissue or below the vermilion. If we see like if somebody's gone too close to the wet, dry border in the lip and you can flip the lip up and you can see filler in that surface tissue underneath the lip, then that needs to be dissolved. I don't see migration. When people talk about tear trough migration all the time, it's a really hot topic right now. And why people are trying to, I hate to say this, I feel like they're villainizing tear trough filler. I think tear trough filler appropriately placed, never overdone, the proper product being chosen. And if it's properly placed, it's the proper product, and it's not overdone, we shouldn't have issues in the tear trough. But I think 9 times out of 10, when we do see some migration in this area, it has everything to do with the placement being off and the wrong product being chosen.
I've never not loved a tear trough.
I've been doing mine for 10 years, and if I was on a desert island and I could have one thing, I'd have two. I'd have a mirror and a syringe of Restylane so I could do my under eyes. But...
it's a game changer. Like it's, and
I know
it's a sensitive area. And I know that that is one of the more concerning areas, I guess, as far as being of safety. But the way that you approach that to me is like so safe. And it's so comforting to know that you have all of these precautions in place. You're not fast. You're not trying to rush through. I've waited on you before because you were working with someone and you were like, I'm so sorry I ran over. I'm like, are you kidding me? I'd rather you take that time with me if I needed it. Take all the time you need. So, you're really like doing the patient right.
When I worked for Dr. Clymer, he would run over all the time and he would say, I'm so sorry that I'm late, but I promise to give you the same time and attention that I gave to the last patient. And I never want to be late. I hate to do that to people, but I'm more concerned about being safe and giving people a great result. And I'm normally not running excessively behind. I try to manage the schedule the best I can, but sometimes things arise. Sometimes people are bleeders. Sometimes people get a little faint because they don't love being stuck with a needle. Surprise, they want to do these things, but maybe they're not as comfortable with needles as maybe you or I are. And so we've got to take extra time, bring them back to life with a Coke or a Sprite, turn them upside down for a minute, let the blood rush back to their head. I mean, those things happen. And I don't want to make them feel any less important in that moment than the next person, or you know what I'm saying?
Well, I mean, I'm like, don't go to your appointment if you don't have some extra time. Like, don't go if you're rushed, because
I know
that's an important appointment.
Not everybody, and that's the other thing where I'm like, I think everybody thinks it's point and click and it should be easy and everybody should just be able to do it. No, not everybody can do it. And we're not all created equal. And there are certain things that like safety just demands time. And you have to be cautious if somebody's a bleeder, like take the time to make it stop bleeding so that they don't bruise so badly. Like that's the difference in holding pressure for one or two minutes or letting somebody continue to bruise and then they go home and, somebody's graduating or getting married and they've got a massive shiner they've got to wear to this big event that was so important to them that they wanted to do injections to their face. You know, it's like, I want to take my time. I try to allot the time for everybody on the schedule appropriately. I don't ever want to run over, but I'm always going to take the time to be safe and do a great result.
Yeah, I'm always 100% good with that. It's a little bit that way in the salon too. Sometimes things take what they take, and
right.
you can't always predict timing. You can't always predict what is going to need to be taking place in every appointment. You can do the best you can, but
right.
certain situations dictate something else, and you don't know that necessarily until you get into it. I know that sometimes there are ethical considerations to take into account with these types of procedures. What concerns do you see people having as far as some of the services that you provide in the office, and how do you speak to those types of things?
I think the ethical thing is like the when to say no, like when you're just taking somebody's money versus when you're actually doing the result that they need. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to, the ethical thing is to say no when somebody doesn't need it.
Are there any ways that any of these products are manufactured that could possibly be harmful to people, animals, the environment, anything like that?
Most of them are FDA approved for, I mean, there are some new things out right now that don't specifically have aesthetic FDA approvals, but they have FDA approvals in other parts of medicine. And a lot of times we're doing things that are off label, and they're okay to do, and they're safe. They're not illegal. They're off label. As far as the injectables are concerned, the ones that we use the most, they are FDA approved for injections in the face. There are some contraindications with certain disease processes, and so we try to go through that with patients when we do our health history, make sure that there's nothing that they have disease process-wise that would be contraindicated to treatment. But that really has more to do with, you know, you're not doing that on the back end. You're doing that on the front end to field anything that they could have going on that would make them not a candidate for treatment.
So you have given us so much great information on all of the different types of treatments that someone could receive. And I'm just curious, one of the things that might hold some people back is the cost. I know that some of the treatments can be quite costly, but can you give us a little bit of an idea how much certain treatments might be and what someone could expect?
Sort of specific to Nashville, you're going to spend probably no less than $450 and probably upwards of that for treatment with neuromodulators. And that's like $450 would be if somebody's like dipping their toe, they're getting started, and it's going to be, you know, a light treatment. But if you're going for full correction dose, it's probably $600-$700 when you're treating upper face muscles. And if you're doing any like little injections for like lip flip or chin DAOs, if you add neck bands, you're going to get closer to $1,000 when you're talking about if you're doing upper face and anything in the chin and your neck. If you're talking about fillers, then it's more often than not, if you're doing it appropriately, you're going to spend multiple $1,000s. Like it could be anywhere between $750 and $900 for a syringe. I think the least that we charge in our office is $450, and that's a half syringe of Restylane. And I usually grab that. It's called Restylane iLite. I'll usually grab that if I'm doing like a tear trough touch-up and somebody doesn't need a full syringe, or if I'm just doing a little like fine line correction around their oral commissure. But ultimately, that's the least expensive thing we have. And when we were talking earlier, when you're doing full face, you're using multiple syringes. The way to make it palatable is that you can do it in stages. And there are certain things that I try to encourage people to do first. I'll say, what bothers you the most? Because if I don't treat the thing that bothers the patient the most, regardless of what I do, they're probably not going to go home and be very pleased, right? Even if I do a great job of the thing that I saw the most. So I want to typically on the first go around, take care of what bothers them the most, and then try to make them understand why the other areas need to blend. And if truly that's the case, like maybe it is somebody just comes in, they just need their lips. But 9 times out of 10, it's more than that. So if it's more than that, make them understand why I have suggested the things that I've suggested, how we can do that in sessions so that it doesn't feel like it's all one big gouge, and how they're going to get good longevity from it so that they don't feel like they have to, like they won't be that cost every year. A lot of times when you're doing a full face, you might spend thousands when you get started, but you're not going to have to spend that every year. And you're right. Going to maintain things as they dissipate. So that's not going to all happen at the same time.
Right.
So that's the nice thing about, and that's if you're keeping it pretty consistent. Neuromodulators are going to have to be done every 3 to 4 months. There are some areas that go like masseters sometimes will last a little bit longer than the other areas that we talked about. But there is a way to make it more doable and do it in sessions and or in stages and still get a great result and a great cumulative result that you can appreciate.
Can you talk about what, I know people rightly so feel that that is quite an investment. What goes into the cost behind the product and behind the service itself?
So the products are expensive. They're expensive to us. They're going to be expensive to the patient, right? Because they're making a profit on it. But also you've got the experience of the injector, and we are not all created equal. There are some of us who are going to educate ourselves to the nth degree. And there are some of us who are not going to get more educated past that first year. And it's just important to know who is doing your injections and to know that they are going to be safe, that they have the aesthetic eye to give you a natural result, and that they can replicate that over and over, that they're going to take care of any kind of adverse event that could arise, that you've got somebody that you can call and get a real person on the phone with who's going to drive up to Nashville at 10 p.m. to look at your bruise. That's what you're paying for. Somebody who's got your best interests at heart, who aesthetically wants to give you the best result they possibly can, and who knows how to do it safely and efficaciously.
That's so true. That's so true. So, Megan, where do you see the future of the aesthetics industry heading in the next few years?
I think we see more with regenerative medicine. I think filler still has its place, and we still see volume enhancement with fillers. Neuromodulators aren't going anywhere, but we really will find a good marriage between all of these products together, working on making sure patients are understanding better that it's not coming in and just treating one area, but trying to make sure that full faces get treated, really prioritizing the importance of making everything balanced, making sure that neuromodulators are used, fillers are refilling deficits, that regenerative medicine is probably going to be used more and more for improvement in skin texture. We'll see that also probably with our less invasive treatments. Lasers can be fairly invasive, but with our laser and treatments, I mean, we always try to marry the structural support we give with our fillers and our neuromodulators with skin enhancing things like lasers and even just BBL and IPL for hyperpigmentation, and then good skincare at home. I think I have more of a hope for the future that we see how important all those things are together. Like sometimes I think that things get cherry picked and we don't give our patients, or we probably don't give them enough credit on understanding how it all goes together. And then I know these things are expensive. That's not lost on me. But it's our job to educate the patient on what's available to them and their job to decide what they want to prioritize as far as finances go. But it's never fair to just assume and only give them half of the education. They need to understand how all of it plays a role together. Because I think everybody, like when they're coming to see us, they want to look their very best. And it's not just what I can do with injectables. And our esthetician Griffin at our office, like she's got so many lasers and devices that are going to help with skin texture. Those things need to be married together. And skincare at home, like you can't just go home and use Dial soap on your face and expect that what I've done is going to just be the thing that fixes all of our concerns. So I hope that we get better and better about making sure that patients understand just how important it is to treat every layer and to put those things together.
Yeah, it sounds like really like taking a more holistic approach.
Holistic approach.
Educating people on how it all fits together. I love that. And hopefully that will be the direction that it goes so that people can truly see that to get the best result, you really kind of need to have the big picture in place.
Yeah. Why does Lindsay Lohan look the way she looks? She's done a multitude of things. There are lasers that have been done. There are injectable treatments that have been done. She's obviously not washing her face with bar soap at home. You know, I mean, we want results like that, but then we expect that only a few things will do it. And that's just not the truth. There are a multitude of things that have been done. And if we want to see great results, we're going to have to understand also as patients that we're going to have to do multiple modalities.
I think that is a challenge in so many different disciplines where you are working with a patient, in such as in your case with me, could be with a client. There is a result that's expected, but then they want to be able to tell you how to get there, because right. for them, you know, it could be a budget thing. It could be just
sure.
some education that they got on YouTube or wherever they saw this information. And then you really need to allow the professional to be the professional. And like you said, I think offer all of the options to someone. And I think you said it perfectly when you said, give that person the opportunity to decide what they want to prioritize, but not giving people the information isn't right. And I like that that might be where it's going, is so people are understanding the bigger picture.
Yes.
A little more. What are the biggest myths that you have seen out there right now?
I think fillers being villainized right now. Like, I've seen several people on social media post about like fillers out for 2025. And I'm like, no, it's not. I hope injectors who are placing it improperly are out. That'd be cool, because it really is about product choice, product placement. Where in the face are you using it? What are you using in the area? Is it made for the strain of the muscle? Is it put in the proper plane? Did you use the proper technique to place it? All those things matter. I have a face full of filler. I've been filling my face for the last 10 years. I should look like a troll if this stuff just migrates all over the place. And to my knowledge, I look relatively normal, and I would think that if somebody came to see me, they wouldn't be scared away by my appearance. But it has everything to do with how it's being done. And I just feel like that's probably the thing that just is, it's discouraging to see that on social media, because it's not, that's what patients are seeing. And then they just think it's the gospel. It's just not. And then you have to sort of debunk that. I spend a lot of time in appointments lately just debunking these things that somebody's seen on Instagram. And I'm like, no, that's not how it works. And also, you've never seen that in your own face, because I'm not putting it in the wrong place. I'm not using the wrong product in the wrong part of the face. And I don't know, it's discouraging to see that, because yes, there are new things that are coming out that are great and exciting, and they'll have their place too, but they're not existing independently of one another. They can coexist in the same space, actually give patients better outcomes. But I don't know, that's probably the biggest thing that I've noticed, that I'm just like, no, that's not true. But we've got to also choose your injector wisely. Make sure they have experience and they've dealt with adverse events. Make sure that they educate themselves annually. They're going to conferences. It's just important to make sure that they know what they're doing, that they know how these things are supposed to be placed. It's hard, because when the patient doesn't know, then it'd be easy for an injector just like, yeah, no, I do this all the time.
Right.
I know injectors who've been doing it a long time and they're doing it wrong.
Yeah.
And I also know some new injectors who are doing it better than injectors who've been doing it for eons. I think it's important that people understand that it's got a lot to do with the experience of the injector and their education. And it's not about their education, diploma education. It's about the education that they've received in this specific field and how much they put into that.
But social media is great for so many things.
Oh, but absolutely.
Kind of like a catch-22, because you do have these stories, news stories, things going out on social media that people see, and then they come in and they're misinformed. But at the same time, people have got to be able to use these outlets in a way that allow them to do the research, the proper research, to be able to find those providers that are following the guidelines, that are doing things correctly, that are keeping up their education and all the things that you described. So it is kind of hard to know. And I just think that again, just takes it back to why it's so important to go to someone like you to make sure that you're very comfortable with this person, because it's really in that relationship, sort of like the reason I have this podcast. It's kind of like, because it's an extension of that connection and that relationship that I have with other beauty providers and clients in the salon. And I think that that connection is so important because it builds that trust.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I think it's going in and getting that consultation and really listening to yourself inside of like, is this somebody that I can thoroughly trust? Are they, is there any sort of like something that's off? Because you're going to do the best research that you can, but there's going to be good information out there and not so great information.
Even an experienced injector can get it wrong sometimes. And so to find that person who also, like, they'll call themselves out if they see something that they did that just didn't turn out the way that it should have, then they are able to take ownership of things that need to be corrected, not get defensive, correct the things that need to be corrected, use products that can be corrected because there are some that cannot. And that's also when you're choosing things that are safe for your patients. Like, why would I put anything in my face that I couldn't correct if the outcome was poor, you know? Like,
exactly.
I just think that those are, if I say that out loud to a patient, it makes sense. But there are plenty of people out there providing treatments with products that are not correctable. And to me, that there's a lack of safety in that. So I think that, you know, also be with somebody who can, who's going to pick the safe things, be with somebody who's going to take ownership if something's not perfect, who's going to correct it, not make you feel like you're doing something wrong by bringing it to their attention. You know, I mean, this is a two-way street. You want the, you want to do a great job, be proud of your work and do safe work, but you also, like, you want them to be pleased and have an outcome that they're proud of. And if somebody ever has an issue, I always try to be the person who can say, look, you're not going to hurt my feelings. Come back and tell me, and be the person who can, you know, correct that if you need to.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, Megan, you have given us so much great information. You have equipped us with so much knowledge. I feel like we can all go out there a little bit more armed with information that we need to be able to make the decision on who we would want as a provider for any of these services. And if it's something that, you know, we're just looking to begin into, it's easier now, I think, with the information that you've given us to walk that path and to find someone that is going to be a great fit for us. I want to end on transformation. Transformation is really at the heart of this podcast and each episode that I do. I feel like the things that we can do for ourselves to make ourselves feel better each and every day allow us to live better. And that is transformation over time. And that's exactly what you do in your practice. You talk about transformation. When somebody can leave your office and automatically feel more confident, that is such a mood booster. That changes your life. I know to you that it's day to day, but it's really very, very dramatic. And it is impactful to someone's life to be able to look in the mirror and like what they see, as opposed to maybe even an hour before feeling totally different about it. So that's a lot of power in what you're doing every day. Can you tell me what is the most beautiful part of what you do, and what do you enjoy the most in the transformation that you're able to provide to people?
Well, I love when people see the results and they're excited. A lot of when people are done with me, sometimes they're swollen and they're bruised, and I'll hand them the mirror and they're not always like, I love it. Even though I see the forest for the trees, they may not. So usually it's the text message or the direct message that I get that says, I'm already so much more confident. Thank you so much for today. And it, like last night, I got one probably 4 or 5 hours after the patient left me. And she was like, no bruising, hardly any swelling. And I'm already so much more confident. And I'm like, and that's why I do it, because I know that feeling that I have myself when my result is done. And I'm like, oh, that's the me that I think that I look like, you know,
right.
I mean,
yeah.
I'm 38 years old and I've got signs of aging on my face and volume deficits that have crept up over the years. And I have 2 6-year-olds that I'm trying to chase around. And I don't always feel like this rejuvenated, revived version of myself. But when all my stuff is done and kicked in, and I'm like, and I know that sounds a little shallow, but you know, when we look our best or what we've perceived to be our best, then we feel better and we sort of get out of our own way. And I don't like feeling self-conscious about something. I like to just feel like I can 100% be me and the best me. And part of that is looking my best. And so when everything's all kicked in and I feel good about me, then I don't know. It's a happier version for everybody. So, you know, I think to hear that feedback from patients and for them to really be excited about what I've done. I mean, for me, it's fun. I really love it. I know what the result's going to be when somebody leaves and they're bruised and they're swollen, but like I see it in real time. And so I get so excited that that happened by my hands, you know?
Yeah.
And then when they leave and they finally see the result too, when bruising is gone and swelling has gone down, and they send family member to me, husbands come to me, mothers and sisters and brothers come. And when somebody comes in and says that somebody has sent them and that they speak so highly of me and that they look great and they just want whatever I've done for them. Obviously, you know, treatments are different for every patient, but for them to already have so much confidence in me and they've just met me, that makes me proud. You know,
well, your reputation precedes you because I'm always singing your praises all the time.
I have
clients come in and, you know, I've shown up behind the chair and have somebody go, oh my gosh, you look great. And it's not because like, oh my gosh, you must have gotten a bunch of filler. It's like, no, you just, oh my God, you look great. You know? And then I just gush on and on about you because
you're
so amazing. And I love what you said about it not being a shallow thing. I talked about that in the intro episode that I did. There have actually been studies done where being able to feel like you look better and being able to feel like you are really representing yourself the way that you truly feel inside, it does a lot for your psyche. It does make
Absolutely
you happier.
Does.
And it's a happiness project. And that's a lot of time underestimated, I think. So I think what you do is so important. And I encourage anyone to really look into it if it's something that has even been kind of like a tickle in the back of your brain, because it's so common now. And there's a good provider where you are. No matter where you are, there's going to be someone who's going to be good. You want to do your research. What would you say would be the best way to research a good provider?
Honestly, social media is great, but word of mouth. Like, find your friends that are doing it that look normal and see who they're seeing. Like, get their input. Know how they feel about the person that they see. A lot of my people are getting to me by word of mouth, and they have forever. And I just think that that's still one of the biggest ways. I mean, what about for you, right? It's word of mouth.
Yeah,
it still remains the biggest thing. Find those people in your friend group who are doing these things that look normal, and find out where they're going. And then ask those questions when you get there. What's the experience? What's the, you know, the level of safety that they practice? And have they ever had any adverse events that they've had to thwart? And, you know, I think, I don't know, that's probably my best answer, is that word of mouth is still king when it comes to this stuff.
I agree. I think social media is great, but at the end of the day, you've got to really have that experience for yourself. Talk to your friends, and referrals are so important. Important. Well, Megan, this has been a world of information, and I just am so excited that you came on the podcast. I know this is going to equip people so well with just being able to navigate this if it's something that they choose to do themselves. Can you tell everyone where we could find you and how they might get in touch with you if they decide that they want to come in and maybe see you?
Absolutely. So I'm at the Plastic Surgery Center of Nashville. It's the office of Dr. Jen Grass and Dr. Hawes, and it's in Midtown in Nashville. And the telephone number is 615-467-6777. And our staff can get them all scheduled and get them in our system, and I can get them taken care of.
Okay. And so where can people find you on social?
So I'm aesthetic_Meg_615 on Instagram.
Okay, perfect.
And I'm also aesthetic_Meg_931 for my rural folks who are in southern Middle Tennessee. You can I do Botox and Dysport in my hometown in Pulaski once a month for people who are more in my area and not willing to drive to Nashville, because there's a lot of people who won't.
Gotcha. I love it. So you've got two different Instagram handles.
Yes.
Okay, great. We will make sure and put all of that information in the show notes. Megan, thank you again for coming on. This has been so much fun.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for joining me on this episode of Lessons from Your Hairstylist. I hope you found inspiration and actionable insights to embrace your unique beauty and elevate your life. Remember, it's all about taking small steps towards a happier, healthier you. If you enjoyed today's conversation, please take a moment to subscribe, leave a review, and share this episode with someone who might benefit from it. Together, let's continue unlocking the secrets to living beautifully fulfilled. Until our next appointment, keep your thoughts on your visions, your self-talk kind, and remember to keep your heart open so you don't miss any opportunities waiting for you out there. I'll see you on the next one.